the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, as far as J1 match days go, this one pretty much had everything. I almost don't know where to start.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? Plenty of goals, plenty of incidents, plenty of massive results at both ends of the table. Yeah, we've got a lot to get into, and that Avispa game might take a few hours.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, there's controversy the likes of which we haven't seen in the J League for quite a while. No question about that. Yeah, players scoring from their own half, and the usual array of VAR madness. So I tell you what, I didn't play the drop at all last week, despite the plethora of VAR incidents. So why don't I just play it off the top this week, and that can basically cover the entire episode.
This week in VAR.
And we will be welcoming in a guest very shortly. So I kind of do know where to start. We'll be starting at the sharp end of the table. But before we move on and talk about our new leaders in J1, I should give a big shout out to Serena Bolden and Alex Bishop and also Cesare Polenghi. It didn't end up being quite a big week at J-Talk Towers, didn't it, Sam? And our two special guests for our two extra episodes, their chats were fantastic, and the response has been excellent to both.
Yeah, it has done. I really enjoyed Alex as well. It's a little bit different. It's not something that we usually have on this, and apologies to you and Cesare, but I haven't quite got around to listening to yours, but I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. And yeah, I love a bit of variety coming to the podcast. People might want a little bit of change from us two droning on.
Yes, well, a change is as good as a holiday, and a couple of different extra episodes for our listeners to sink their teeth into, and as I say, thanks again to everyone involved for those extra episodes. So, it appears that musical chairs is catching, Sam. It was, we've mentioned it so many times in recent weeks that down in the relegation dogfight, teams seem to be shunting up and down the table, and teams at the bottom suddenly a few weeks later find themselves 12th, 13th in the table. And it's now caught on at the top of the table as we after the weekend's match day 28, where we have our third team at the top in what was a span of 4 days before they played Wednesday's game in hand at home against Tosu. Kawasaki were third, but they rose to the summit above both incumbents Yokohama F. Marinos and Hiroshima after their 4-0 romp, only to be stunned by a Shonan winner at the death on Saturday. And that result, coupled with F. Marinos being held away at FC Tokyo after a second-half fight back from 2-0 down by the Gasmen, opened the door for Sanfrecce. And despite going down to 10 men at 0-0 with 25 minutes left of their game at home against Shimizu, Hiroshima proved their mettle and ended the match day on top of the pile after claiming a huge 2-0 victory against the odds, Sam. This was, this game was pretty much had everything in and of itself. I think it's fair to say that, at least from what I could judge from the highlights, Hiroshima were at times second best in this game. And I don't know whether it took the VAR controversy and the sending off of Tsukasa Shiotani to wake them up, but until that point in the game, Keisuke Osaka was definitely the busier of the two goalkeepers.
Yeah, it definitely was. I think you had it right when it was showing their mettle in this game, because Shimizu had come in such good form, and they were the better team, I think, for large parts of this game. They had to be bailed out by the goalkeeper, some reasonable defending as well. It was quite a tight and cagey first half, but yeah, Shimizu came out of the blocks second half, but Hiroshima just hung in, and this is one of the games, and I'm cliche o'clock, but if you're going to go for a title, you have to win ugly occasionally. You have to win when you're not playing very well. And I think they did this, and the response to going a man behind was, yeah, absolutely phenomenal. They really did up their game from that point. And from going down to 10 men, there was only one team in it, and that happened to be Sanfrecce. So, yeah, fantastic for them. They're without Fuji and Mitsuta in this, and Nogami at the back, so a few things were going against them, but yeah, it's a really important victory, and fair play to them. They're making this title race even more unpredictable. Yes, Marinos and Kawasaki have the games in hand, but points on the board is always good. It's scoreboard pressure, if you like, for Hiroshima. So anytime you're at the top of the league is a great time to be there. So, yeah, great for them. And they'll be looking on to Marinos' game in midweek to see if they can hang on or if the musical chairs continue.
Yes, most definitely. So, well, yeah, it was. It looked like one-way traffic in the early stages of the second half, especially. Osako had to make two key saves. Firstly, from Carlinhos, who was sent through on goal by Iago Pikachu. And then in the 52nd minute, Osako had to leap to a bat away across in from the right, but then scrambled back to make a low save from Takashi Inui's first-time shot. And, one of the controversial decisions, one of the biggest ones from the weekend, Sam, was the sending off of Shiotani after he fouled Takashi Inui out on the right, 35 yards from goal. The referee initially brandished a yellow card, but then after a VAR review that lasted pretty much all of 5 minutes, Shiotani was shown a Dogso straight red. We've seen a number of these this season, and they always leave us scratching our heads. I mean, this one did for me in particular, as it's only a week since I fumed over a much more clear-cut incident, or at least it was to me, in the Kashiwa versus FC Tokyo game that resulted in Takumi Kamijima's yellow card being allowed to stand when I felt he should have taken an early bath just before halftime in that game. So can you see the parallels between the two incidents, a week apart? And for me, I mean, the one last week is much more clear cut. In this instance, Shiotani was on the wrong end of the decision. How did you slice it?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. First, I mean, I don't want the end of the season to end, but the sooner I get rid of the word Dogso and have to hear about that would be the better, because, yeah, it's constant. It's always a bit confusing. They don't seem to have any consistency about their decisions. I agree with you, last week's was more clear cut. This one is one of the more borderline ones because Inui is quite deep. But I think what does for Shiotani is just Inui's last touch, which does then take it towards heading towards goal. So that's why it's been given. I think it's one of those where I can understand why the referee or the VAR were taking their time over it, because it wasn't like a clear-cut one. But I think the correct decision was a red card, but why it has to take 5 minutes, I don't know. I'm very much in favour of if you get clear and obvious, and that's how it was meant to be. If you can't tell after a minute, probably just stick with the referee's view on the field, and it saves everyone so much time. Because, yeah, this one, I don't think there could be massive arguments either way. But, yeah, red card on the balance, I think, was just about correct, but yeah, if you give this one, you have to give the one last week.
Yep. So there you go. It was Shiotani on the wrong end of this decision. Was it technically the right one? Well, yeah, it probably was. And well, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the one last week definitely was a red card as well. But anyway, they'd struggled in the early stages of the second half, Hiroshima, and then obviously had this setback at losing Shiotani, one of their experienced defenders. But cometh the hour, cometh the man, and Takumu Kawamura came off the bench with 15 minutes to go, and he got his fantastic night started in the 83rd minute when he won the ball back in a scrap in midfield and played it out to Yoshifumi Kashiwa on the left. Kawamura continued his run into the box, and Kashiwa's chipped ball into the area found him, and he volleyed across Shuichi Gonda and inside the far post. And what can you say about his second in the 95th minute, Sam? An absolute stunner, and well, a goal of the season contender it absolutely has to be. Kawamura scoring from 10 yards inside the Hiroshima half, the ball sailing over a stranded Shuichi Gonda and bouncing just before the goal line and into the roof of the net. What an impact to make off the bench. And it's been the story for Hiroshima, hasn't it? We've questioned their depth at times, whether they had enough of that to make a proper run at, not just the top four spot, but let alone the title. But if players like Kawamura are going to answer the bell and put in performances like these, then they'll definitely take some stopping, Sanfrecce.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is Karamu's, like, he's, for the last 6 weeks or so, he's been doing this coming off the bench. He missed a large part of the season through injury. But, yeah, since he's come back, he's not started too many games, but he's really made his mark on this. And what a goal this is. I mean, yeah, you say 10 yards and so he's on half, but even the angle, he's right towards the touchline. I mean, he's probably 70 yards from goal when he actually takes aim. And it's such a good effort. It goes straight into the goal. Yes, Gonda's off his line, but he has no right to even think about shooting from where he is. So, yeah, absolutely incredible effort. Reminded me, I think there was a Champions League, like a Roma goal, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. It reminded me of that. It was absolutely superb from Kawamura. And, yeah, great for Hiroshima if they can get goals like this from substitutes. I mean, yeah, they're still hanging on in there in this title race. And, yeah, for the neutral, long may it continue.
Absolutely. A fifth straight win sent Michael Skibber's son Freche to the summit. Sam, I've referenced it so many times throughout the season that they played the battle of the bottom away at Shonan in match day six. And since that game, which happened to be their first win of the season, they've risen all the way from 17th to first. And you're obviously right to mention the games in hand that both F. Marinos and Kawasaki have, and it now does look like a pretty clear-cut top three, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, as we've said, they've proven their mettle here against the odds. Have ended this with a tremendous home victory, and well, yeah, we'll wait and see. Obviously, what happens in midweek, as you said, when F. Marinos take on Shonan. But, yeah, they're well and truly in this fight, San Freche. A quick word on Shimizu then. They'll be disappointed they didn't take one of those chances earlier on in the second half. And for them, a first loss in six. Obviously, yeah, it would have been a huge win to give them some proper breathing space outside the relegation zone. But they're still up in 11th, but now just 3 points above 16th placed Gunma Osaka, who of course won one of their games in hand in midweek. So yeah, when you look at the table, they look all right up there in 11th, but they really don't have any breathing room, do they?
No, not at all. I mean, I think they did very well in this game for large parts. Yes, didn't have quite the finish, and then a quality team like Hiroshima were able to punish them. But yeah, they won't be too disappointed, I don't think. I think their fixtures generally are quite manageable. I think Shonan at home next week, so there are still plenty of chances to clear this relegation zone. But yeah, as you say, 3 points is the difference. It shows you they've been on such a good run, but they just still haven't been able to pull away. And that's going to be the thing for a lot of these teams down there. You have to have a really consistent run of form, because it's so difficult to completely get yourself out of the mire. But I think Shimizu will just take this defeat on the chin. I think they still played well, and they'll feel quite confident in their position that they'll be able to steer clear of relegation zone. But with some of the results this weekend, you can't even say a home game against Shonan is easy.
Yeah, so much to get through in the rest of the match day. But next, we'll be chatting about Yokohama F. Marinos with Stuart Woodward. Always a pleasure to welcome our Yokohama F. Marinos correspondent, Stuart Woodward, back to J-Talk. Stuart, it has been quite a while between drinks. How are you doing?
Well, yeah, very well. I've survived the summer, I guess, so far. Been a very hot summer. And, it's been a bit of while since I've been on the podcast. And then it's been a while since we've had a match.
Yes, it was quite a lean August for F. Marinos, wasn't it? And, quite a while since your unfortunate demise in the ACL led to, a couple of weeks break. We're here to chat about Saturday night's grand occasion at Ajinomoto Stadium when Yokohama F. Marinos visited FC Tokyo. At the end of the day, Stuart, an overriding feeling of what might have been for your side after letting a 2-0 halftime lead slip.
Yes, I thought we'd actually kind of wound it up at that point. And there were so many chances. I think, well, on both sides, I think the score in the end reflected the match, I think, better than if we'd had a runaway success. But it was a little bit disappointing at that point. And I think it might have been a little bit the timing, to go into half time which was quite extended because of the VAR calls. To go into half time, that gives the opposition or whoever's down a little chance for the pep talk and to come out on all cylinders. You know, we got to do it. I think it's the worst. The worst of the best situations to be 2-0 down at half time, because you can get one back, and if you can get one back, you can get two back. So yeah, it was a little bit disappointing, that one.
Yeah, so Sam, after Kazuya Konno had hit the bar in the ninth minute with one of his trademark curlers with his favoured left foot, there were a couple of flashpoints, weren't there? And F. Marinos had a couple of definite shouts for penalties. The first when Terohito Nakagawa had a coming together with Yuto Nagatomo that was ruled by VAR to be just outside the box. And then in the 27th minute, Leo Ciara was taken out in the box by a sliding Jakub Slovic. No penalty given. And after VAR had a look, I guess they decided that Slovic got a touch on the ball. He looked very, very fortunate to me.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to have to come between both of you for these decisions, if there's any different feelings on it. I thought the first one, I thought, was the correct decision. I thought Nagatomo's push on Nakagawa was just outside the area. I mean, it's not consistent with a lot of them from a couple of weeks ago, where they started in outside the area, may have continued in, and they gave penalties. But yeah, I think this was definitely a free kick, and the call was correct, although it takes forever. And yeah, I'm with you on this one with Leo Ciara. He seems to push it away from Slovic. It doesn't seem like Slovic gets any of the ball, and he definitely gets Leo Ciara, but we can only see from the live view and the one angle that they gave for the replay. So I guess we have to assume that VAR has seen the reverse angle, has seen a touch on the ball from Slovic, and that's why it's not being given. But it'd be nice for them to show us that, because from what I saw, it looked like a clear penalty.
Yes, Stuart, I've got to hold my hands up. I thought the Slovic one on Ciara was a penalty. So, I think Tokyo got away with one there. No question at all. I imagine in the F. Marinos end, there was uproar and outrage over over these two decisions.
Well, I think actually there was probably more just kind of wondering what had actually gone on, because both were at the opposite end of the field for us. So again, like the stadium experience is like something's taking a lot of time, taking a lot longer, people are talking, referees doing something, and then it's not a penalty. So it was a real mystery. I had to watch it on the TV now to see what had actually happened, and I was thinking when I watched on the TV that the push from Nagatomo was very, very light. And Nakagawa, he's only 57 kilograms. So he's a real lightweight. And he does go down very easily with the slightest of touches. So from where we were seeing at the opposite end of the field, you know, it could have been a hard push. You know, we had no way to judge. But then looking on the TV, it seemed a light push. And I don't think VAR would wind it back, because I think the referee had, judged it as being, enough contact. But I think that was it. It was fair in the end when having the free kick just outside, because there was a little bit of stumbling went on, and he finally, you know, kind of rolled over when he was inside the penalty area. But if you could definitely say the offence was outside. I don't have a big problem with it, though. I would have loved to have had a penalty at that point.
Yeah.
And then with the other one, my recent thinking about VAR is that VAR is based off the stadium, the TV camera footage, and all they have is a desk where they can see all of the camera angles that the TV has, but I don't think they have a good angle for that on the other side. So what you saw on the TV is probably what they could see, and I think this is going to trouble other leagues that are introducing VAR, where they don't have very good TV coverage anyway. So what you see on the TV is just what they have to work with. So, yeah, okay. At that time, it looked like more of a penalty. And I think there was a chat message about that time that it was this the first penalty claim didn't look like a penalty, but this one really did look like a penalty. But okay, he's got his hand to it, so it's not a penalty. Okay, well, you know, those things happen. I wouldn't cry too much about them. And then like we're positively celebrating after the second goal went in, and that was everything was forgotten at that point.
Well, yeah. So I think it was 1-1 in terms of those decisions. So I wasn't going to kick up too much of a stink about Nakagawa possibly going to ground a little bit too easily. But yeah, thankfully for Tokyo, VAR decided the initial coming together was outside the box. And then, well, yeah, as I said, point blank, I think Tokyo got away with one on the Slovic Ciara incident. But yeah, as the boys have both said, yeah, maybe there just wasn't the right angle for the VAR to properly judge that there was a clear and obvious error made, whatever that actually means in these times. So yeah, that was just before the half hour, and basically from the last 5 minutes of the first half, F Marinos looked like they were going to be over the hill and far away. It was, they'd put that disappointment behind them, and 5 minutes before the break went in front when Tokyo defender Yasuki Kimoto flicked on an F Marinos corner, and Tomoki Iwata slid in to give F Marinos the lead. And it got even better for them on the stroke of halftime when Nakagawa was free in the center to steer home a low cross from Takuma Nishimura. And it would have been most definitely game, set, match at the break had Slovic not made an incredible save leaping backwards in the 8th minute of stoppage time to keep out what would have been the goal of the century, I believe. Yohei Takaoka's punt forward was headed on by Elber, then volleyed forward by Ciara and headed across the box, the top of the box, by Nakagawa for Nishimura to strike a preposterous volley from 25 yards. The ball literally would have travelled from the F Marinos box into the Tokyo net without bouncing if it weren't for Slovic's intervention. I mean, that's just something that your side is capable of, Stuart. Few teams are, but that was absolutely outrageous, wasn't it?
That was fantastic. And when I saw that, I was just thinking, why don't they play that way on those really rainy days when you can't kick the ball through the water? Yeah. So, yeah, it would have been amazing if that had gone in. Yeah,
pretty audacious game of headers and volleys, wasn't it, Sam? That was just absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was kind of like something you just try right at the end of training session. You might just have a go, just some sort of trick shot. And it was wonderful. I mean, no offense, Ben, but I really wanted that to go in. It was just absolutely incredible football. And yes, Slovic was just a bit of a party pooper. But yeah, that would have been Everaldo hands down for me. And I don't think I would ever have said that.
No. I mean, only a goal like that, I think, could top what Everaldo did earlier on in the season. But, Sam, I mean, heading into the sheds, F. Marinos would have been absolutely bouncing because it looked like they'd put the game beyond Tokyo with that burst at the end of the half. And, as Stuart said, yeah, they were able to shake off the disappointment of not getting a penalty when they might have felt hard done to, that they might have had two. And it did look like there was only one winner heading into the break.
Yeah, it did look like that. Obviously, whenever you go like score right at the death of the end of a half, it usually is it deflates the team that's conceded, and they usually don't come back into this. But Tokyo, I thought their response was fantastic in that second half, and they showed signs of this last week against Kashua. Anytime something went against them, anytime Kashua scored, they were right back at it and played very well. And yeah, the second half performance I thought was absolutely fantastic, and it was led by a Kawasaki Frontale talisman. I mean, yeah, who'd have thought they'd be having like a rogue agent playing out for Tokyo to stop Yokohama?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we said it in the Hiroshima game, cometh the hour, cometh the man, and Koki Sukugawa has certainly made a strong impression on FC Tokyo supporters since his arrival in the summer transfer window from Kawasaki Frontale. He was never able to properly nail down a spot in the Frontale side, and transferred over to Tokyo, and it looks like he is grabbing his opportunity with both hands, Stuart. As we said at the start when we welcomed you in, a frustrating one because it looked like there was only one winner at halftime. And as we said, you might have been even further in front than you were at the break. But then for Tokyo to turn things around, it was, yeah, well, from an F. Marino's perspective, you will have been disappointed because in a roundabout way, both of the goals came from a failure to properly defend Tokyo set pieces.
Yeah, and that was pretty much the comment that Kevin Muscat said after the match, that okay, now we know what we have to work on this week, you know, that, and that happens sometimes. So very disappointing, but it was a good match though. I thought when I looked back at the kind of possession stats, I thought, gosh, I think that was one of the worst matches for us in terms of possession. And so it was pretty fair, I would say fair score. We definitely, you know, had our moments. And I find that Marinos tend to have this pattern where they'll get lots of very short passes and really clever football, but they're kind of stuck on the line or by the corner. And it never makes it into a shot on goal. And they really have to have more shots on goal in the end to even get a chance to, you know, get some more goals. So they're a little bit stuck sometimes over there. Very, you know, very nice football, but, you know, we have to get some more shots.
Yes, indeed. So, as we said, the Tokyo, were able to turn this game around thanks largely to Koki Sukugawa and, F. Marinos and not quite doing their job defending Tokyo set pieces. So 8 minutes after the break, Kashif Bangunagande sent in a free kick. It wasn't properly dealt with by the F. Marinos defence, and Sukugawa blasted home through traffic at Yohei Takaoka's near post for what was his first J1 goal. And then 10 minutes later, he doubled his fun, heading in a corner from 6 yards to bring Tokyo level. From there, the chances went mostly for the hosts, but Luis Felipe and Adailton, a pair of Tokyo substitutes, were wasteful when they might have at least tested Takaoka. And well, that was until right at the end of the 5 minutes of second half stoppage time, when F. Marinos carved out one last chance. On the counter, Marcos Junior sent a lovely ball through for Anderson Lopez, who flicked over Slovic with the outside of his left foot, but saw the ball come back off the bar. So obviously that would have sparked wild scenes in the F. Marinos end, Stuart. How did you feel the side fared overall? I mean, you had that purple patch just before half time, but as you said, there was a long time between games for your team. I guess it could have gone, you know, one of two ways. They could have just completely roared out of the gates and given Tokyo one of their patented spankings that you're so used to handing out to us in recent seasons, or you could have definite flat periods in the game and struggle to find your rhythm. And I guess from what we saw on Saturday night, it was mostly the latter.
Yeah, I think we're in a bit of a, I wouldn't say lull, but at the moment, a bit of a patch, because, you know, if you look back on the last few matches with all of the cup matches, there's been losses and getting knocked out of all of those. So, you know, we've kind of lost a little bit of the fire that we had earlier on in the season. But still, you know, there's a lot of good football during the matches. So, you know, it's not as if we're doing anything wrong or anything bad, but the results are not coming. And those kind of matches which turn into a spanking, they usually are a result of getting like three goals. And we always joke that, okay, you have to get the first three. We're not confident at being 2-0 up. So this one was definitely one of those matches. And I remember, I think Angie Postecoglou was saying once before that, you know, like fans would rather see 4-3 than 1-0. So, you know, we're going to play this way and make it an exciting match. But, you know, sometime we're going to lose some goals. And it's a fairly typical. It's one of these typical matches. But, you know, Kevin Muscat seemed to be, you know, quite OK with it and got a point. So that's good. But I think he's happy in the position right now, because we've got a few matches in hand, and we're, I'm going to be start to, I guess, catching those up pretty soon. But yes, we really, really need to, pull together for the run-in as it comes. And I think the weather right now it's been really, really hot, like really, really, this summer has been so hot. But we're coming into cooler weather, hopefully, and that really suits the style of play. If the players are running around a lot, the cooler weather helps us. And I always think that it's a disadvantage. The summer months are just too hot to be playing so intensive football in this country anyway.
Stuart, do you think it's just like a case of kind of lost momentum at the moment with F. Marinos? Obviously, a large break since your last game, and you've just kind of run out of league games in a while. You've just had cup games. They're always played a little bit differently. Teams approach them a bit differently. And yeah, you've been caught cold in a few competitions now. It's like it's one win since the 6th of July. So is there any real concern, especially now that Sanfrecce have gone above you, or do you just think, yeah, we'll get into a flow now, we've got games coming up and we'll get back to our best? Or is there some concern that, yeah, the title that you probably had a real grip on, let's say a couple of months ago, is kind of fallen away from you?
Well, I don't think it's fallen away. I think it's ours to win right now. And I always think that, okay, you can play well throughout the season. And, you know, you're going to slip up a few times. So you have to rely on the other clubs, the rest of the clubs, to take points off the second and third contenders. And so, you know, we've had all the opportunity to walk it this year. But again, we're still a little bit in a precarious position that everything could change in a few weeks if we didn't get those wins. But we can only hope that we can. And it can go either way. I wouldn't say nervous, but I think we're in a better position than we were in 2019. Well, definitely in a better position than we were in 2019. So, you know, the cool weather lead-in is what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, and then just looking ahead now, your fixtures, generally speaking, are all against relegation-threatened teams. Do you think that's a benefit for F. Marinos in terms of playing weaker teams, or would you prefer to avoid these teams that are absolutely fighting for their lives?
Well, I think I'm fairly happy with the upcoming matches. I think, you know, that's probably, yeah, pretty good for us. If they haven't had good performance, then hopefully they won't have good performance against us. One of the things I was thinking about for a long time was about the last match is against Kobe. Like I really hope that it isn't like the relegation match. Like Kobe need to win to stay up, and Marinos need to win to get the title. That would be just too much. Like in my dreams, I would hope that things would be wound up by the last match, the last home match we have, which is against Urawa, and then we go away to Kobe for the last match of the season. So I hope that we can tie things up pretty quickly and not leave it to the very last match again.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. You mentioned that game at home, the final home game of the season against Reds in match day 33, Stuart. It's just amazing the way things have worked out that Reds are currently the highest placed team that you still have to play. Everybody else that you'll play from now until the end of the season in the final nine games are below Urawa in the table. In fact, Shimizu are the only team in the bottom 10 you don't play from now until the end of the J1 season. So, I guess the way Sam phrased his question, yeah, it could be littered with landmines and banana skins as teams literally scrap for their lives in the top division. But I don't know if you could cherry pick. I guess you could cherry pick pick some of the mid-table teams who are just going to sleepwalk through the last month or so of the season. But, yeah, in terms of the teams around you, all of those fixtures are taken care of. And starting with Shawnun at home on Wednesday night in one of your games in hand, basically you're going to be playing pretty much all of the relegation dogfighters plus Urawa and Nagoya in the remainder of the season. So, yes, I guess it's, as you said yourself, it's there for you to win. If you win all of your games, then you will be champions. And that's the task that sits in front of Kevin Muscat and his side with 9 games left to play. So, I guess, I'll take a little bit of credit away from the Saturday night's fixture as a Tokyo supporter, coming from 2-0 down against the team that obviously has designs on winning the title and is one of the three teams that could do it at this stage is, I think a feather in Albert Pucci's cap and a result that Tokyo supporters can be very, very happy with, especially, as we said earlier, some of the spankings we've received from F. Marinos in recent seasons. So finally, Stuart, on Saturday night then, the occasion, I described it as a grand occasion in the intro, and it looked, obviously I would have loved to have been there, it looked like quite a display of pyrotechnics and this, that and the other. So what was it like to be there and experience it?
Yeah, it was actually really fantastic. Somebody just mentioned to me, like when we were going in, there would be fireworks, and I was like, okay, that's nice. But it was like a real show. They had the flames going up and the fireworks from the roof of the stadium, and also they had this kind of a new technology they haven't seen before, where everybody on the Tokyo side were given a wristband on the way in, and the wristband was radio controlled as to what color it would flash. So there were kind of waves of blue and red and white, I think, going around on the throughout the whole crowd, and synchronized with the fireworks and everything. So it was one of the, I would say, one of the most impressive light shows and fireworks shows that I've seen for the start of the match. It was a really, really great event. So overall, very entertaining night.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. Yeah, generally Tokyo can't organise a piss up in a brewery, so I'm glad to hear that maybe they've turned over a new leaf under their new owners Mixie, and they might have pushed the boat out a little bit to celebrate the end of summer, and so I'm glad to hear it was well received by an opposition supporter. I think all the reviews have been glowing from the occasion itself, and obviously the game was pretty much action packed as well. So Stuart, thanks ever so much for joining us again. Dare I ask about the Tricolor Pridecast these days? It has been a long time between drinks for your F. Marinos club specific podcast as well. Are we, if I give you a nudge, are we likely to hear some more from you and Jamie and the guys for the remainder of the season?
Well, I think we can pull something together. We have to coordinate. It was a little bit the difficulty is mainly scheduling. So I might have to co-op Tony and maybe bring in some others to try and kick it off again. In our own groups, I think right now the Celtic talk is outnumbering or outweighing the Marinos talk. So we have to have a few words about that.
Well, yes, indeed. I mean, you've got a title to win, Stuart. So, I mean, yes, it's the masses want to hear about goings on at the Nissan Stadium, and we'd love to hear yourself, Tony, and all the other guys' thoughts on the situation. And I don't know. Well, maybe after a barren August, maybe your appearance here is going to be the good luck charm to turn around to F. Marinos' fortune and steer them on to a second top flight title in 4 years. What do you reckon, Sam? You don't have to say it just because Stuart's here, but I mean, looking at that fixture list, it does. You'd pretty much have to make them the favourites from this point on, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it looks lovely. I mean, I tried to just swing turn it a little bit, trying to focus a little bit on maybe if there's a potential banana skin there. But yeah, if you gave any Marinos supporter the next run of fixtures of Shonan, Avispa, Kyoto, Sapporo, I think everyone would snap their hands off at that. So yeah, I think they couldn't have it any easier, I don't think. So it's in their hands, definitely. But this is the J-League. You can't just say this is an easy schedule and they'll coast to it. They should win the league, but yeah, who knows?
Who knows, indeed. Yes, that's the great thing about J1. It's the most unpredictable league in the world. And, well, yeah, we saw a lot of it over the weekend, of course. So, Stuart, yeah, thanks again for joining us. And we look forward to, seeing how F. Marino's fare in the remainder of the season. And, yeah, hopefully we can have you back on to chat about things in the death throes of the stretch run.
Yes, I'm available anytime, and I'm planning to go to all the matches up to the end of the season. Got the tickets for Kyoto and Nagoya already, so it's going to be quite a lot of travelling in the next few months.
All right, sounds pretty epic, and hopefully for Stuart, yes, his side will be raising the shield at the end of the season. So thanks again to Stuart Woodward. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will wrap up the rest of J1 Match Day 28. Welcome back. Always great to hear from Stuart ahead of what is sure to be a fascinating run-in for F. Marinos at the top of J1. Speaking of the top of J1, obviously at the start of this match day, as we mentioned earlier on, Kawasaki were top of the pile heading into match day 28 after they'd won one of their games in hand at home against Tosu. That was their fifth straight win, and all the momentum looked to be at their backs, Sam. But then they rocked up to the Lemon Gas Stadium down in Hiratsuka to face lowly Shonan Bellmare, who had been on a winless run themselves. And wouldn't you know it, the plucky hosts dug out a win at the end of the day to complete a famous double against the two-time defending champions.
Yeah, well, this is the most J-League result you can get, isn't it? One team just gone top, the other terrible form. But yeah, Shonan have been fantastic in kind of derby games this season. They're terrific, obviously, away at Kawasaki. And I thought they performed well here. I mean, Kawasaki took the lead. You think, okay, that's it. Kawasaki will go on and win this quite comfortably. But Shonan showed real fight, especially in that second half. And I think their performance in that second half deserved the 3 points. I thought, yeah, played really well in there. Yeah, they're giving themselves a chance, aren't they? It's all a massive melee kind of down there. But yeah, vital 3 points for them, so fair play.
Indeed, and Shonan had slipped down into the promotion relegation playoff spot after Gunma Osaka won their game in hand on Wednesday night. So, to come back, as we said, against the two-time defending champions and, end up on the right side of the equation is a huge feather in Shonan's cap. If you need a refresher, listeners, of course, earlier on in the season, Shonan won what Sam and I agreed was the biggest shock in J1 history when then bottom Bellmare beat then top Kawasaki 4-0 away. And this one wasn't quite as extreme a result, but arguably almost as surprising. As Sam said, Kawasaki took an early lead through Kei Chinen, who didn't know much about it, but inadvertently headed on his captain Shogo Taniguchi's header from a Yasuto Wakizaka corner in the 20th minute. And the way that Kawasaki had been traveling in recent weeks, we obviously expected at some point the floodgates would open again and Shonan would get swamped. But no, in the second half, Bellmare fought back, and 5 minutes after the break, they were awarded a penalty when Jeziel was adjudged to have bundled over Shuto Machino in the area. And after the usual VAR delay, Machino rifled home the spot kick, despite Jun Sung Ryong guessing the right way. I don't think Frontale Twitter was happy with this decision at all, Sam, but which way did you see it?
No, it made me slightly worried about my opinion on it, because I thought this was a clear penalty, and I don't think I've seen anyone that agreed with me so far. But yeah, I think Machino gets goal side of Jeziel. It's not like a horrendous tackle from Jeziel. He's not 2 foot tackled him or anything, but I think he's made contact on Machino. It's enough to bring him down. And I thought this was a clear penalty, so I agreed with the referee. As a Tokyo supporter, I can't imagine you're going to disagree with me, or am I just seeing things and it wasn't a penalty?
No, well, yeah, I think there's definite contact on the back of Marchino's leg. I mean, Jeziel, to his credit, he doesn't go to ground. He doesn't slide in at all. But, yeah, I think there's contact. And, yeah, you've seen him given. And, yeah, I don't think there was enough evidence to say a clear and obvious error was made. So, yeah, I was... yeah, I was happy enough to let it stand. Obviously, my opinion matters most of all. So, yeah, if I was happy with it, then I think we all should be. But, yeah, obviously 1-1, still a game to win. And, yeah, in a derby, obviously, yeah, the form book goes out the window. That's well and truly been demonstrated this year in the two meetings between these clubs. 4 minutes from time, it looked like Kawasaki might have eked out a winner. But Daiki Sugioka bailed out his keeper, Kosei Tani, by scrambling back and heading a shot from a tight angle by Yu Kobayashi off the line. And then 3 minutes into stoppage time, ex-Frontale man Hiroyuki Abe, who spent 3 seasons at Todoroki, strode on to a cutback from fellow sub Naoki Yamada and blasted past Junsung Ryong to give Shonan an incredible win. And well, yeah, a pretty amazing coincidence, Sam, that on the same day that ex-Frontale man Tsukagawa obviously did Frontale a huge favor by denying F. Marino's the win away at FC Tokyo, that yes, an ex Kawasaki boy in Abe was the man to deliver the dagger away at the Lemon Gas Stadium.
Yeah, he won't be welcome back, and he's burning a few bridges, isn't he, Abe? Because that result puts Gamba right in the mire as well at the bottom. So, yeah, he's just firmly Shonan at the moment and won't be getting Christmas cards from any ex-teammates, I don't think.
No, that's for definite. All right, so Frontale, I guess we'll just consider this a bump in the road. They've obviously still got to get back to full strength, which they'll hope to be in the coming weeks. And they're well and truly in the thick of the title race. There's no question about that. This result, coupled with the other two in the top three over the course of Saturday, saw them back to third spot, goal difference behind F. Marinos, having played a game more than them, but of course still two fewer than Hiroshima. So just to wrap things up at the top, Hiroshima have 50 points from 28 games, F. Marino's 49 from 25, and Kawasaki 49 from 26. Belmare, again, is this just going to be a one-off result, Sam, or did you see enough from them and enough fight to suggest that they're properly going to be up for this relegation dogfight scrap? They're in the position where they're a point outside the promotion relegation spot now, having played two games fewer than Gumba and Avispa, a point behind them. So again, if they're good enough, they'll stay up. It's just a matter of the fact that in the past month or two, I think it was the first win in six for them, wasn't it, that they just haven't looked that good. So whether this can give them a proper boost, which we obviously saw them get earlier on in the season when they roared up the table, we'll wait and see. But you think obviously they'll be taking away a lot of feel good factor from Saturday. The only thing is that their next game is, as we've mentioned a couple of times, is away at Yokohama on Wednesday night. So yes, they've been good in derbies this year, but Frontale and F. Marino's back to back in the space of 4 or 5 days, that's a definite test for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be difficult. They can take heart from the last time they played Kawasaki. I think they did lose it. In fact, they did lose the immediate game after it. But following that, they went on a run of about 5 or 6 games unbeaten. So they've shown that they can be up, but they can be difficult to play against, can get results. But yeah, this is a really tough game to have to follow. But they're going into it in the highest spirits possible. I mean, I said they were good at derbies. I think I only mean this Kawasaki one because they lost 4-1 to F. Marinos earlier in the season. So they won't want a repeat of that. But yeah, I mean, you've got to give them confidence. They've had such a barren run of results. I mean, they've only not played too many games, really, but two games ago was that 5-1 drubbing at home to Sapporo. So yeah, this is a perfect antidote to that. They should be full of confidence, and they're going to the Marinos team that, yeah, isn't in the greatest of form either. So yeah, why not go and get the victory? They've got this one of these games in hand. Just try and make the most of it. Because they're outside the relegation zone, they've got these games in hand. It's almost a free hit for them. So, yeah, they've got... I don't see why they can't go and get a result against F. Marinos. They've shown they're capable.
All right. Well, that's definitely one to watch on Wednesday night. There's Emperor's Cup quarterfinals competing for everybody's attention also on Wednesday. We'll preview all of those games at the end of the episode as we move on through the rest of match day 28. Next, we'll head up to the Kashima Soccer Stadium where hosts Antlers entertained Urawa Reds, and a double from Arthur Kaike put hosts Antlers into the lead, but Reds hit back, and Yusuke Matsuo and Takuya Iwanami equalized for them. And yes, the game ended 2-2. I guess notably here, there was some interest around the selection table for both teams. Sam, notably, Kwon Sun Tae appeared to be benched by Daiki Iwamasa, and Yuya Oki came in to start in goal, while several first-team regulars were missing from the picture entirely for Urawa. Goalkeeper Shusaku Nishikawa, right-back Hiroki Sakai, and the winger David Moberg, who's obviously made a huge impression in recent weeks, they were all missing. So I guess that might have played a factor in Reds starting this game a little bit slowly, or maybe an ACL hangover, whatever it was. Kaiki's goals were pretty good. And ultimately Reds had to come from behind for their point, but they were good enough to do so.
They were. And going back to the selection, it was a difficult circumstances, I suppose, for Reds. They'd obviously gone through all the ACL games, so players probably needed a rest. They had announced one COVID case at the time of kickoff. They've announced a few more after that, so maybe that impacted on certain players missing out. I think Hiroki Sakai's got another injury, which isn't great leading up to a World Cup. He's getting a few of these knocks at the moment. So, yeah, they have to change things around a bit, but they still were able to put out a very good team. Kasper Juncker's come on, we'll have to deal with that. So, yeah, it wasn't that bad for them. They were a bit slow to start with, but the quality eventually told. And, yeah, for Kashima, it was interesting. I don't think Yuya Oki should ever have been dropped, really. I mean, I don't think he played too badly a few seasons ago when he was playing, and I wanted them to stick with a young goalkeeper. Obviously, they didn't do that. They went with the experience of Kwon, and really, it's fairly harsh that he's been dropped. I don't think he's been the issue for them. I think he's played generally quite well, but it's good to see Oki get back into it. Hopefully, he can get a run of games at the end of this season and into next season. And it was great also to see Ryotaro Araki back on the bench. He got maybe 13 minutes towards the end of the game. So, yeah, it's good to see a few young players back. Araki obviously was a star from last season. Hopefully he can produce some goods towards the end of this season. But, yeah, a few interesting selections. And it contributed to the kind of chaotic way that this game started.
Well, yeah, and so we mentioned Nishikawa was absent between the sticks for Reds, and that meant obviously a chance for Zion Suzuki, who we talked about with Ralph towards the end of our Reds section on last week's podcast, of course. There was a time when it appeared Suzuki was going to be Ricardo Rodriguez's number one, but he certainly didn't cover himself in glory with Kaiki's second goal. Still not really sure, having watched a few replays, how he managed to divert the ball into the net on that angle. It looked like he had Kaiki's shot covered. I don't know whether he ended up diving too early and the ball just went in off his arm, or it's certainly one I think they'll have him working on in training this week.
Yeah, this is unfortunately a poor game for him, because I think he's at fault for the first goal as well. Obviously, the defenders should probably mark Kaike to start with. But yeah, he's a little too far out from his goal, so the ball's almost past him before he can even react. But the second goal is worse. It looks like he may have dived a little bit too far and it's kind of hit the inside of his hand and bounced in instead of being pushed away. So not ideal. He had a good Champions League campaign just in the group stage. I thought he played quite well, maybe under less chances on goal, I suppose, and against lesser opposition. But yeah, this wasn't ideal. It wasn't the greatest thing. So I just think for Suzuki, still only 20, I think he could benefit from doing what Kosei Tani has done and had a couple of seasons out on loan, out at a lower J-League club, get a lot of experience, a lot of shots against you, and that should improve him as a footballer, because I'm not sure necessarily just sitting on the bench behind Nishikawa is doing any more for him. I mean, he's probably learned a lot from Nishikawa, but I think he'll learn a lot more going out and into the real world and experiencing a bit more first-team football, because, it looked like a guy who hadn't really played too much.
Yes, indeed. All right. So, Reds, the point there, not really doing them too many favours when it comes to what their supporters hope will be a push for an ACL spot at the end of the season. And for Antlers, Sam, well, yeah, I mean, we mentioned it. The new manager bounce, it really only lasted one game, didn't it, for Daiki Iwamasa? And, they'll be disappointed to have blown a 2-0 lead here at home against one of their traditional rivals. And both teams having to settle for a point after a 2-2 draw. There was the same result over at the Yamaha Stadium in Shizuoka Prefecture when hosts Jubilo Iwata, of course, rooted to the foot of the table, hosted high-flying Kashiwa. Many people had these two teams in their relegation dogfight in their J-Preds, of course. But Reysol have defied expectations pretty much all season, and they did take an audacious lead, Sam, in the 23rd minute when Takuma Ominami made an underlapping run and crossed low into the centre, where Douglas improvised an audacious backheeled Rabona finish. We've chatted about this goal in the green room, and backheeled Rabona was the best way we could come up with to describe it. But a tremendous goal from one of your favourites.
Oh, yeah, well, he is my favourite. I was speechless at the time. I hadn't got a clue how to describe it. It was such a good goal. The quality, the adjustment, the technique, everything about it was just absolutely fantastic. I just fall over if I attempted anything like that and get my feet in a mess. So, yeah, wonderful to have Douglas back first and foremost. Yeah, it looked good in his 60-odd minutes here, and just, oh, what a goal.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. In first half stoppage time, Ominami got his second assist of the evening when he sent over another cross from the right, this one of the aerial variety, and Yuki Muto headed back across Ryuki Miura and into the net for 2-0. Iwata looked dead and buried, but two goals in 4 minutes from a pair of substitutes saw them salvage a point. First, Mahiro Yoshinaga arrowed a brilliant volley from 25 yards into the net for his first J1 goal in the 73rd minute. Then Fabian Gonzalez was released through the middle, took the ball around Masato Sasaki and passed the ball into an empty net before racing over to celebrate with some Iwata fans who had tied up a Colombian flag with his nickname Lasso written on it. So a memory for those fans who, however much they paid for that Colombian flag, it's more than repaid its value in that interaction with Fabian Gonzalez. Terrific for him to go over and acknowledge them. And terrific for Iwata to rescue a point when, as I say, Sam, they looked out of the game. Reysol had dominated the chances up to that point. And just imagine the scenes if Yasuhito Endo, the veteran, hadn't sliced wide, had instead hit the target and fired past Sasaki in the 95th minute. I mean, you can understand a bloke who is, 42, 43? I mean, how he gets through 90-plus minutes at his age is absolutely stunning to begin with. But then, to arrive in the box and have a chance to win the game for his team, he's an absolute icon of the game. There's no question about that. But, just imagine if he had been able to slot that in. But, for Iwata, a precious point coming from 2-0 down. And, it gives them at least a fighting chance, doesn't it?
They keep themselves in it. I mean, generally this season, it's been the same story that they look dead and buried, but they just have this fight and they keep themselves involved in games. And I mean, if they did that a bit against Urawa, then Akirito would probably still be in a job. But generally, it was a good result for them, considering the circumstances. Like, if you look overall, a point for both teams is probably not ideal. Like, Kashiwa are just dropping out of the kind of race for the ACL at the moment. Iwata now 5 points clear, really. They've got to turn some draws into wins at some point. So it's not necessarily ideal, but it's a great way to really bounce back in this second half. I thought they played really well. Yoshinaga's goal is absolutely fantastic. And Gonzalez, I mean, he's barely started any games this season. I know he had a bit of a dust-up in the first or second game against Shimizu, but generally, whenever he's played, he's looked like the best striker they have. I mean, he offers a lot more than Sugimoto, for example, has done this season. So maybe this is just another nudge to the manager. Like, look what I can do. It was a wonderfully taken goal. And I would expect him to come into the lineup next week. So, yeah, good response from Jubilo. But eventually they're going to have to, yeah, start finding 3 points.
Indeed. All right. So we've chatted about Shimizu losing away at Hiroshima earlier. And of course, just a few minutes ago, chatted about Shonan winning at home against Kawasaki. And with our mention of Iwata, we are now properly down and dirty in the relegation dogfight. And there was a huge six-pointer at the Sanga Stadium on Saturday evening when Kobe returned from ACL duty with this Kansai Derby away at Kyoto. But yeah, it was Sanga who burst out of the blocks and were 2-0 up inside 10 minutes to leave their visitors shell-shocked. First, Sanga captain Temba Matsuda received from Kosuke Taketomi, turned and fired over the advancing Daiya Maekawa with just 38 seconds on the clock. And then in the ninth minute, Taketomi and Matsuda combined again, this time outside the box with the ball running for Yuta Toyokawa, who shot past Maekawa for his first of the season. It just wasn't Kobe's night, Sam, and this was illustrated right at the restart of the second half. Daiju Sasaki came on for Vissel at the break, and 8 seconds after the restart, he should have halved Kobe's arrears. But after charging down a Naoto Kami Fukumoto ball upfield, he saw his shot come back off the far post. I mean, goodness knows, Chokui J, I mean, we've seen him blow his stack on the touchline, Sam. If that had gone the way it should have gone, really, because Sasaki, all he had to do was hit the target give Kobe literally the perfect start to the second half. Well, I can't imagine Cho might have spontaneously combusted on the Sanga Stadium touchline.
Well, I'd have thought so. I'd have hauled Kamifukumoto off straight away if that had gone in. I might have done it anyway because it was just nonsense. They were 2-0 up, very much in control, and he just pretty much handed Vissel a lifeline on a plate. And, yeah, thankfully for him, they didn't take it. But, yeah, really atrocious way to start a second half, because the first half I thought they were absolutely fantastic. Like, they were the team that were up for the game. They were there to fight. They were there to try and win, get 3 points. Vissel didn't turn up for the first 10 minutes. I mean, the defending for the first goal is useless. It's just thrown into Taketomi. Nobody gets near him. Everybody has decided to just join everyone on the one side of the pitch. Everyone's dragged over. It's easy for Matsuda. It's a nice spin and finish. And, yeah, they're 1-0 up inside the first minute. And then even the second goal, it's a good football from Kyoto. Taketomi, Matsuda, Toyokawa all combining nicely, but nobody's getting near them. Nobody's putting a challenge in. And this is kind of the difference that we're seeing with teams at the bottom. Vissel have got all the players. They should be winning games, but they haven't got the tactical acumen of Chokui J. They haven't got the fight of the Kyoto players. And that was what was borne out in this game. I thought Kyoto thoroughly deserved the victory, and Vissel, I thought, were just really poor. And every week I say, okay, Kobe will get out of it, they've got the players to get out of it, but then every week they seem to disappoint. So yeah, they're right in the mire, and yeah, I'm not going to predict them to go down still, but come on, you've got to want it. They've got to try and match the intensity that other teams are going to play, because obviously Kyoto are fighting for their lives, but if I'm on another J-League team and I've got the chance to relegate Vissel, I'm up in my game. And I think they're going to have to focus and deal with that for the rest of the season. And I'm not sure they've got the mentality to cope with it.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't look like it at this stage, does it? Again, it just wasn't their night, but they've got to turn things around, and they've got to show some mettle here, or sooner or later it'll be too late. They're still, I guess, you know, with games in hand and some of the teams above them, they're still in. It's still technically in their hands, but they're just whittling away their opportunities. So often it must just be so frustrating to follow Kobe this season, especially after such a long break due to the ACL. You want to see the players ready for this game and ready for their opponent. But as you say, Sam, yeah, Kyoto wanted this far more at the start, and Kobe were playing catch up the rest of the way. And obviously, yes, Sasaki's start to the second half set things again off on a bad note, and things went from bad to worse for the visitors just before the hour, when Yuki Kobayashi was shown a dog so straight red card for pulling down Toyokawa. Although, well, Sam, I mean, it's a foul, but as we as you pointed out in the green room, actually, technically, Kyoto weren't denied a goal scoring opportunity, were they?
Yeah, this is a really weird situation because, yeah, Toyokawa is brought down, but Kyoto just go on straight away and have a shot on goal. So has he really denied a goal scoring opportunity when seconds later they have a goal scoring opportunity? It's a really weird grey area, I suppose, in the rule. I'm not going to begin to say that I know what the rule is or what's gone on there. Maybe if the referee has blown his whistle straight away, which I don't think he did in this situation, then you could call play dead. But I think there was a chance on goal. So I don't mind him bringing it back for the free kick. But because there was the chance to score, I would say this was a yellow card. But I'm happy for anyone to get in touch and tell me the exact rule or guidelines on this, because yeah, it looks like they had a chance. So I don't know. What did you make of this one? It's a very weird one.
Well, yeah, just watching from the highlights, I mean, I just saw the pullback and thought, OK, yeah, that's a foul. I looked ahead and saw that there were no defenders in a, you know, a reasonable area around the pair who clashed. So, yeah, I thought it was a red card. And again, I don't know whether the highlight cut away before the Kyoto player ended up having the shot or not. But yeah, I didn't even notice that. So for me, it looked like, the correct adjudication of a straight red. But yeah, just another frustrating part of the evening for Kobe. And indeed, the last big chance went to Kyoto's Yudai Kimura with the 4 minutes left. But he was denied his first J1 goal by the post. So it was a precious win for Sanga, their first in seven in the league, and indeed a first clean sheet in 10 games since that famous 1-0 home win over Kawasaki at the end of May. Their remaining schedule is very tough, though. I think, as we referenced a couple of times over the past few episodes, they don't play any other dogfighters until Iwata away in the final game of the season. So, of course, in there, they do have some games against teams who will be mired in mid-table mediocrity and maybe don't have as much to play for as Sanga. But, it does look a testing run-in. While Kobe are 4 points from safety, as we've said, they do have some games in hand on some of the teams above them. But, they've literally got it all to do with, for them, 8 games left in the season. All right, next we'll head to another Kansai club, Gamba Osaka, who were hoping to build on 2 straight victories. Sam, of course, said we talked about them getting back to winning ways in last week's episode. Then they won their game in hand in midweek. The good times they hoped were going to continue at home against Tosu, who themselves were coming off, as we mentioned earlier, a 4-0 battering away at Kawasaki in midweek. So what happened? Well, of course, the visitors, Tosu, had one of their easiest games of the season and utterly dominated Gamba, winning 3-0 away from home.
Yeah, they were very good, Sagan. I think they just simply outplayed Gamba. I think that's the only way to describe the game. They were the better team from the first minute to the last. I thought, yeah, some of the movement up front was really good. I think they benefited with having Miyashiro back up front. Obviously, he was ineligible against Kawasaki midweek, but him and Jun Nishikawa, I thought, combined really nicely in forward areas. Nishikawa, one of these players that for so long we've expected something to happen with him. It hasn't really happened, but maybe this is the spot because he played really well. And yeah, Gamba just didn't get to grips with them. And Tosu defended well. They dealt with most of the long balls that went forward. They were, yeah, pretty comfortable. Even Park stayed in his goal for a bit, so that was nice. So, comfortable victory. And back to the drawing board for Gamba, because they had been on a very good run for the last couple of games, but right back into the bottom three now.
Yeah, it was there on a plate for Gamba, but yet they just did not show up in front of their home supporters. And they were punished after a poor ball out of defence by a Kwon Kun Won in the 15th minute. Taisei Miyashiro crossing into the centre where the ball was touched past Masaaki Higashiguchi by the Cerezo loanee Jun Nishikawa. Then 8 minutes into the second half, it was 2-0 to the visitors after Yoichi Naganuma had time to pick out a cross from the right, and Miyashiro volleyed home in off Higashiguchi from 6 yards, and Tosu wrapped up the 3 points with their third, 12 minutes from time. Nishikawa released down the right and then crossing for Yuji Ono, who moved to Tosu in the off-season after 2 years with Gumba to tap in from inside the six-yard box. So, yeah, crystal clear that result, and thoroughly deserved for Tosu. It takes them up to seventh in the table. Next, we'll head to the game that, we could literally do a one-hour special on, Sam. And, you and I, our regular podcast, a one-hour special would turn into a two-and-a-half-hour epic, I think, just talking about Fukuoka 2, Nagoya 3. We could literally be here all night. So let's just try and work through the major incidents from this game. And there obviously were several, and they started in just the second minute. It started in controversial circumstances with Grampus taking the lead with Fukuoka goalkeeper Takumi Nagaishi and the centre-back Daiki Miya out of the picture as they collided outside the box, both trying to play a long ball over the top. With both lying prone on the floor, the referee allowed play to go on. Takuya Shigehiro crossed into the center. Grampus captain Shoei Nagaki slid in and shot against the post, with Ryoya Yamashita firing in the rebound. Now, Nagaishi was ultimately unable to continue and was replaced in the fifth minute by Masaaki Murakami. First things first, Sam, should this goal have stood? The two Fukuoka players were down. Obviously, it was an aerial duel, so there has to be concerns over head injuries for both of them. Yet play was allowed to go on with obviously nobody in the net for Fukuoka.
Yeah, this was really poor refereeing. I don't blame Nagoya at all. They have to play on. They have to play to the whistle. But when there's a head collision, the referee, his first job is to ensure the safety of the players. And two players have clashed heads. No matter how ridiculous the defending is, he has to stop the play. He has to. It's maybe harsh on Nagoya going through to score. They made a bit of a meal of it, but they did score. But yeah, the referee, the first thing he has to do is check that both players are okay. Clearly, they both weren't. They both suffered head injuries. So, yeah, has to stop it. There's no excuse for that. And I hope that's really looked into because, yeah, we've had various moans about concussion and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, the first thing he has to do is make sure that both are okay. So, and he doesn't do his job here. So, yeah, really poor refereeing.
All right. And that obviously had a run-on effect when things got particularly wonky in the 20th minute. Again, this was truly bizarre. But first things first, Fukuoka winger Jordy Crooks was cleaned out by a Haruya Fuji tackle and stayed down. Grampus's Leo Silva then putting the ball out of play for a throw with the Crooks still on the floor. Now, Vispa's Yota Maejima restarted play with a throw-in to Lukian, and with everybody expecting the Brazilian to pass the ball back to Mitch Langerak in the Grampus goal, he instead played the ball across the box to Crooks, who arrived and lashed home via a deflection. A lovely goal, but it did spark huge protests from the Grampus players and staff. And yeah, I mean, Lukian, he just wasn't having it, was he, Sam? He just pointed to the other end as if your goal was allowed to stand, so this one should be as well. I think he probably got his, he might have got his wires crossed slightly, as obviously the first goal, as you said, it wasn't Nagoya's fault. It was the referee's fault for failing to stop play. And in this second instance, the Grampus have actually done the right thing as a Fukuoka player was down injured on the floor. Leo Silva had put it out. So in the interest of fair play, Fukuoka simply have to return the ball, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Lukian just goes into business for himself. He's decided that goal shouldn't have stood for Nagoya, so I'm making sure we have one back. And it's not the right way to go about it. It's poor sportsmanship at the end of the day. And it was no one else was on his wavelength. I think Maejima threw it in. He was throwing it to Langerak, but Lukian sprints across to collect it. Geordie Crewe just kind of goes along with it because it's played into him and they score. But yeah, it's really poor. And Luke Jan was, I think he's still fuming now because as Avispa decided that Nagaya for Nagoya could walk the ball in to get a goal back, he was just stood there fuming at what was going on. He was furious about the entire event. But yeah, I think it's really poor from Luke Jan. There are ways to go about it, and I don't think he chose the right one.
No, fair enough then. And yeah, obviously a few words exchanged both on the pitch and on the touchline with the Fukuoka manager, Shigetoshi Hasebe, ultimately instructing his players to stand off and let Grampus score. So Kensuke Nagai jogged down the middle of the pitch from kickoff and rolled the ball past Murakami. Obviously great for your fantasy team, Sam, but I would question Grampus's choice of Nagai, because as we know from experience, he usually can't hit a barn door from 6 yards. I was worried that he was going to miss the target, even though he had the run of the pitch to roll the ball in from the edge of the box. But he did manage to plump the ball in the net. And then, fair play to Nagai, because 7 minutes before the break, he received a Yuki Soma pass and from alongside the penalty spot, fired past Murakami with a terrific finish to make it 3-1 to Grampus. And then the 12 minutes after the break, Avispa pulled it back to 3-2 when Yuto Hiratsuka stroked home a lovely first-time shot from Crux's cutback for his first J1 goal. But after they lost Mia to a VAR-assisted straight red card for a high boot to the shin of Shigehiro in the 67th minute, it looked a bridge too far for the hosts. But on a night of controversy down at the Best Denki Stadium, they might have had a penalty, the hosts, with the 6 minutes left when a corner appeared to brush the arm of the Grampus defender, Tiago, before John Mary slammed the loose ball against the post. So what did you think, Sam? Obviously, nothing really went right decision-wise for Fukuoka on the evening. And was this another one they could feel hard done to about?
This one, no, I don't think this is a penalty. I think Thiago's hand was down by his side. It does hit it, but it's natural position. And I think it's fair not to give that. The problem was just before the corner, there's a way clearer handball. I can't remember exactly which defender it is, but his entire body is in an unnatural position as he gets in front of John Mary. His arm's out. He clearly handballs it. That should have been a penalty. And yeah, Vispa have every right to feel aggrieved over many things, I suppose, in this game. But that certainly was a penalty. And John Mary, I think, took to Twitter. I think everyone took to Twitter at the end of this game to complain about one thing or another. But I think they definitely should have had one penalty. But the one, from the corner, I didn't think that was. So yeah, one correct, one incorrect. But it doesn't help. But John Mary and Vispa, they didn't get the one that they probably deserved.
Okay, well, thanks for mentioning that, because hands up, that early one you mentioned didn't make the DAZN highlights package, so I wasn't aware of that incident. So, Fukuoka supporters who are raging at their podcast device at the fact that I've mentioned this one that probably wasn't a penalty when they probably should have had a much more obvious one slightly earlier on in the game, then there you go. Sam's mentioned that. I apologise that I did not. So, obviously it could have been a point then late on for Fukuoka, and that would have been precious, no question about that. They ultimately end the match day level on points with the 16th place Gumba, but 4 goals of goal difference better off. Obviously it's going to be tension-filled last 6 weeks of the season for Fukuoka, and obviously all of the teams down in the relegation dogfight. One team that did give themselves a little bit of breathing room, well, they're basically in the same boat as Shimizu on 31 points now, 3 points ahead of 16th place Gumba, are Consadole Sapporo, who won the only game played on Friday night. They kicked off the match day at home against Cerezo Osaka, and they left it late, but they ultimately wrapped up a 2-1 victory with 2 late goals, and they had to come from behind to do so. Sam, it looks like Cerezo's ship may have sailed after 2 straight defeats. They'd obviously been on a terrific run that saw them edge right up to the ACL places. But these 2 straight defeats Will have dented their momentum and their confidence, I'm sure. But for Sapporo, their situation had become rather grim, hadn't it? The fact that they were down on 28 points. This was a win they simply had to have. And, well, as I said, they left it late, but they were ultimately able to edge their way past Cerezo.
Yeah, a massive 3 points for them, but they can thank Cerezo's finishing for keeping them in the game, because Cerezo should have wrapped this up well earlier than that when they eventually scored. They had so many good chances. Taggart hit the post early on. There were so many different scenarios where the ball was dropping around in the 18-yard box and someone would get a shot on it, but they would never connect properly. They'd slice away. I think Wejo was particularly at fault for that sort of thing. And really, Cerezo should have been 2 or 3 nil up in this game before they eventually score through a fantastic Nakahara curling effort. But yeah, Sapporo shouldn't have had a way back into it, but they kept going. I suppose they countered, they hit Cerezo on the break, and they got two crucial goals for them, because as you mentioned, they were dropping right into peril. They're still in trouble. I don't think this has necessarily cleared them at all, but yeah, vital 3 points. But Cerezo, yeah, they've just kind of hit a roadblock, haven't they? They were outplayed by Sanfrecce last week, and this week just nothing was going right for them. So, yeah, I think any title aspirations are definitely gone now, and they're facing a real battle for an ACL place, because that top three looks like they're pulling away. So, yeah, maybe the Emperor's Cup might be, start to become more of a focus for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was amazing some of the chances they spurned in this game, wasn't it? Yeah, I mean, twice players are sliced over from inside the 6-yard box. And yeah, a litany of chances that they, on another day, they might have converted. But as you said, it was Nakahara who ultimately broke the deadlock with his first J1 goal with 12 minutes remaining to give Cerezo the lead. And yeah, they might have felt confident at the time they could see the game out. But Sapporo equalized with 4 minutes left when Kim Gun-hee headed a Gabriel Xavier cross into the top corner. And they won it deep into stoppage time when Ryota Aoki passed to Superchok on the left, received the return pass inside the D, and after taking a touch, arrowed his finish past Kim Jin-hyun. So, yeah, Sapporo's heads remain above water, but and they've got 7 games still to play. But, yeah, they're still well and truly involved in this. Yeah, it's definitely an 8-headed monster, isn't it, Sam? Although if Kobe don't get a win in the next couple of games, it might end up being 6 teams for one spot, right? If Kobe and Iwata end up getting cut properly adrift, then it might just be those 6 teams outside the 2 automatic spots that battle to stay out of 16th and the promotion relegation playoff. But yes, it would be an absolute fool to try and nail any colours to the mast and say who they think are going to go down at this stage. Obviously, Iwata have shown their fighting qualities on Saturday and, well, pretty much throughout the course of the season. So I don't think anybody's writing anybody off at this stage. And yeah, it literally does go all the way up to 11th placed Shimizu. Nagoya, we talked about them last week. They were missing Mateus away at Fukuoka, but their win, however they got it, is probably just about done enough. Could I be any less vague there? Probably just about done enough to not guarantee them J1 football next year, but they're a lot more comfortable than the teams below them. Shall I put it that way, Sam? All right, let's move on then. We've wrapped up all the 9 games from the weekend's match day 28. I should say, of course, it was just great to have all 9 games back. I'm sure you were much busier than you had been for the previous couple of weeks, Sam, but the match day did not let us down, and I'm sure that Wednesday night will not either. We've mentioned several times already that second place Yokohama F. Marinos host 14th place Shonan Bellmare in a Kanagawa derby one of the games in hand that both of these clubs still have to play. And there's also Emperor's Cup quarterfinal action to sink our teeth into, Sam, and they all look interesting in their own right, don't they?
Yeah, a really interesting set of ties. There are two that you would say maybe are the more blockbuster ties in Cerezo against Hiroshima, and you've got Kobe against Kashima. Those are probably the, you'd say, were the TV picks. They'd be the best ones. But there are other intriguing ties. I think Kyoto versus Tokyo Verde is a really interesting one. On one side of the draw, the winner of that plays the winner of Cerezo versus Sanfrecce. And then, yeah, Avispa versus Kofu as well. I don't know where, how... like Kyoto and Avispa are going to approach this. Do they think, okay, forget about the Emperor's Cup, we've got to try and survive here? Or do they look at that as like, okay, there's a winnable games for us here, we'll get some momentum by doing that? So it'd be interesting to see how they approach it. And yeah, for the likes of Hiroshima, well, especially more so, I'd say Kashima, Cerezo, these are, and Kobe, I suppose, if they, imagine if they were J2 and the ACL, that'd be fantastic. it's kind of like for Cerezo and Kashima, they might be looking at this is our best chance into the ACL. So yeah, really intriguing ties. It always gets exciting when you get to this sort of stage in the Emperor's Cup. And yeah, really looking forward to a fantastic midweek of action, because yeah, that Marinos Shonan game, yeah, it's a title contender against a relegation contender, but as Shonan have shown, they can really turn up in these derbies, and I've not ever seen a dull Kanagawa derby.
No, yeah, you'd have to go back a long way, I reckon. And they never fail to thrill and excite. So yes, let's hope for more of the same at the Nissan Stadium on Wednesday night. And then yes, those four Emperor's Cup quarterfinals will be absolutely tremendous, I'm sure. It'd be a fool to try and call those games, and especially with a couple of underdogs from J2 in the form of Kofu and Tokyo Verde taking their place in the last eight of the competition. So absolutely terrific. And we'll obviously touch on the results from those games in next week's episode, when we'll also review match day 29 in the top flight, Sam. It looks another tasty one. There's eight games on Saturday. I think there's an obvious choice for Sam's pick of the weekend.
Sam's pick of the weekend.
And then just the one game on Sunday. Sapporo are used to opening the match day. This time they end it with the only game on Sunday. They host Iwata in a 1:05 kickoff at the Sapporo Dome. But Saturday's slate, it looks interesting, but there's clearly one standout fixture, isn't there, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. Kawasaki versus Sanfrecce Hiroshima, a fantastic gaming prospect. Hiroshima, this is a real test for them, because last time they had one of these kind of title challenges, they got found out a little bit maybe against F Marinos. They lost 3-0 there. So yeah, if they're going to be a title contender this season, this is a game they need to get a result in. So yeah, it should be fascinating. Frontale going to have to bounce back. They might have F Marinos back on top of the table. They might be more distant in third. So yeah, massive game. And I can't look past this, especially not to Sapporo Jubilo. I much prefer that to be on a Saturday rather than an extra bonus 5 a.m. kickoff on a Sunday.
No rest for the wicked, Sam. And as you often say on the pod, yeah, Sapporo really failed to entertain. So Iwata scrapping for their lives, could be an interesting one. On the Saturday, the match day gets going at 6 o'clock with technically it's a relegation six pointer, as two of our eight dogfighters, Shimizu and Shonan, meet at Nihon Daira. That is obviously an opportunity for Shimizu to put to daylight between themselves and the rest of the dogfighters. But Shonan have just shown what they're capable of at home against Kawasaki this past weekend, and we'll wait and see what they do on Wednesday night before traveling over to Shizuoka. But an interesting looking match day. Maybe not so many highlights as this past weekend, but as we said, J1 never fails to excite, so I'm sure there'll be some hidden gems in there that will have us purring on next week's episode. Hopefully we'll have a respite from VAR controversies, but that's probably asking for too much, I guess. Sam, an absolute pleasure as always with the nine games to review. I look forward to doing so again on next week's episode.
Yeah, always a great episode. That's a bit big-headed, isn't it? I probably shouldn't say that.
I reckon they're all pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, and I look forward to catching up with it. Hopefully we just have a little bit calmer, I suppose. None of this Nagoya Vispa nonsense. We can't deal with that every week. But yeah, I'm sure there's going to be hidden gems throughout this fixture list.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we'll leave it there. That's this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast wrapped up. Sam and I would like to thank Stuart Woodward once again for his time on this episode. And thanks to our patrons for all of their ongoing support on Patreon. And thanks to you, listeners, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 29. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.